Player 2 Pixelcast episode 1. Fuck this, I'm not naming these things anymore, it's just a number 1. My name is Tim Henderson, I am overtaking this website or something like that. And now your main Pixelcast is going to be starring, whatever, me. A person who may or may not be able to speak English properly. One way or the other, I am your host this episode and will probably be your host for many episodes to come. However, I have not abandoned the, foundation of this fine website. So, Huso, you are still here.
I am here, and I'm more than happy to let you take the reins.
To waffle on. Just do the work.
Yeah.
Do
the- yeah, well, it's nice for someone else to do the work for a change. I'm really enjoying that, so...
Right, yes. Digging deep again, we also have... Sarah, you're here, somehow.
Yeah, somehow. Hi!
You got Bubba asleep.
I did get Bubba's sleep. I'm so proud. She's talking and kicking in her sleep now, so she might be awake, but or she could just be pretending to be asleep, or we just have no idea. So
I love the idea that you're like...
It's going to be a Russian roulette tonight, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to see how we go. If I go silent for a while, it's because the kid's screaming her head off.
Which, I don't know. If you have a nice isolating microphone, maybe we won't notice. And speaking of newborn babies, Ken... You are not a newborn baby, but you also have one.
Oh, that is true. I am a 38-year-old baby.
We're collecting them
freshly
like
freshly born. You just came out like that.
I came shooting out of... Well, I'll just leave it there.
Skip the milk phase entirely. Just move straight on to fried chicken.
As the one female in the room, don't talk about 30-year-old men and shooting out of anything, please. Yeah, for the love of all things sacred.
It's good to see that the traditions of the Pixelcast are living on.
Oh, is this a tradition? I guess. Can we just pretend this is an entirely new thing?
Well, if you wanted to do that, you should give it a new name, but you didn't, so we're not.
So we're stuck with it, yeah.
Yeah, sorry about that, champ.
Well, you know, we've been podcasting for like 10 years or something, like back before anybody else thought to take Pixelcast. Like, this is such an obvious name, it's kind of weird that we're the first ones to get it.
Sorry, this is a complete aside. Did I ever tell you about the time? Because I have the Pixel Hunt web on the Facebook, the group community page thing. And just a couple months back, I got a message from someone naming their company Pixel Hunt, threatening to sue us for using Pixel Hunt.
Oh, wow.
And it's like, it's literally like a photography company out of India. Like, it's just a company that's based in India.
I can see that name coming for a photography company, I suppose, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, good luck, sunshine.
Yeah.
That sounds like a scam.
You should have asked them for money.
No.
Oh,
money,
man.
You're
like,
buying
you
it off
like,
of me.
You willing to sell that handle?
Yeah.
No, it's the last piece of Pixel Hunt we have left, so...
No, the thing is, threats are free.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, no, I just deleted the message.
Anyway, yes, to try and keep this back-to-back games rather than apparently very high-resolution photography where you have to hunt for the pixels... We're coming at you a little bit, just like maybe just a couple of weeks too late to like really jump on that nice and easy game of the year bandwagon for the topic side of things. So we're gonna take a slightly, different approach and like talk about stuff that we discovered or rediscovered over the course of last year. Cause I don't know, personally always feel like that whenever like people say, "What's my favorite game of this year?" and like my favorite game I played this year for some reason was like 10 years old, but I can't talk about it because of stupid rules. So we're just gonna break those down and talk about
the rules.
Break those rules and talk about stuff we like that we have played recently-ish. But before that, games and Ken, I haven't seen Spider-Verse, I haven't played Spider-Man. How good are these things?
Spider-Verse is very good. I haven't seen a movie for a very long time at the cinema. So I wanted to make it special. And Spider-Verse is actually very good. But more related to games, I've been playing a bit of Spider-Man, the PS4 exclusive. And there are some things I like very much about it, and there's one big old bugbear that I do not like about it. It's got a good story so far. I'm probably about 5 or 6 hours in, so there's still, I'm very, very near the beginning of it. You know, Peter Parker, Mary Jane, the usual, you know, responsibilities of being a superhero versus the realities of living in New York City, you know, that sort of thing, and strained relationships, and that sort of thing. And it's a good Spider-Man story that makes it very easy to get invested in, because it's very human, I think. It's very everyday. It might seem mundane, but it's applicable and it's relevant and it's easy to relate to, I think. That's what's making the story enjoyable so far. The star of the game is definitely the movement. Swinging about New York City, webs, you know, swinging, jumping, running up the sides of walls. I think the movement is great. It's made by Insomniac.
Yeah.
So, you know, no surprise there with relation to movement. I think the last couple of modern Spider-Man games have been a little bit disappointing with the movement. It doesn't feel like you're actually swinging. I think the epitome of the Spider-Man games, a lot of people say it, and I am complete in agreement, is Spider-Man 2 on, I think, PS2, GameCube, that particular era, where you felt real momentum. And there was some level of authentic physics, you know, trying to recreate physics within the system.
I don't know if authentic's the right word. Maybe fun.
So fun, but I wanted to use like the word authentic as opposed to realistic, because it's not realistic in that, you know, you wouldn't be doing this. But it feels believable. Because you're actually in Spider-Man 2, when you shoot out a web, it actually attaches to a physical item in the world. So if you're running around sort of the park area, you can't actually swing, because there's nothing to attach.
There's nothing to grab.
Yeah, there's nothing to grab onto. Yeah. So that was a thing that is mirrored here in Spider-Man as well. There is an attempt to make it believable. And there is momentum, and there is speed, and there is control, which is great. I think between those three things, when, you know, perfectly balanced, make a really good Spider-Man game. The negative is that it is
puddles, isn't it, Ken? You bastard!
No, it's absolutely. There is a distinct lack of puddles.
There's not enough puddles.
Shiny puddles. Yes. Yeah, that is my major bugbear.
Spider-Man is not wet enough.
The more
I'm crying over the lack of shiny puddles.
The smaller bugbear is that this is the open world structure gets old so fast. It's waypoints, mission markers, collectibles, unlockable areas, towers that you need to climb up to review more areas of the map. You know, you've got sections of the map that is, you know, locked away. You've got side missions where you kind of have to complete a few in order to unlock points to skill up, and it's just such a it's a tried and true open world structure, and it gets old very, very quickly.
The thing is, I mean, what you're describing here is like an Insomniac game to the T, because these guys tend to be like the quintessence of design by committee. They're just very, very good at doing it.
Yeah, I guess so. That's probably true. But I think with open world games, I mean, there's gotta be a better way.
What I found with Spider-Man is that, like, yes, everything you've said is 100% correct, and it's very much a generic open world collectathon. I found for me personally a lot of the annoyance of that was negated by how good the movement was.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because it was I have to go and pick up another backpack or collectible or whatever, but you know what, it's a shitload of good time getting to the backpack. So it wasn't as like if you were to do that in an Ubisoft game or something, you might go, oh god, I gotta go all the way here to collect this stupid thing. But in the Spider-Man game, because movement was so good, I didn't find it anywhere near as annoying as I could have possibly found it annoying.
No, it is, you know, and on that note, I mean, I agree to a point. I mean, the way I approach the game is slightly different. It's just, for me, is I'm swinging anyway, and I just happen to be in an area like, oh, there are a few collectibles here. I guess I'll just do that. But the swinging and the movement is primarily the focus. What's annoying for me is, it's just that it's such a vanilla approach to open world.
Yeah. Oh, it really is.
It's 2018/2019. We've used this particular model of open world for the last however many years, and it is time to sort of switch things up.
Well, I mean, Zelda came out and nothing's imitated that yet. I mean, it's not what I'm going to be talking about later, but I have been playing Red Dead Redemption 2 lately. And guess what? That's really not pushing things forward. You can see the money dripping off that game, but also, like, you press forward in that game and about 5 years later, Arthur Dent will take his first step.
That was a lag input problem, though, with the PlayStation, wasn't it?
I haven't played on Xbox. I don't really know. It feels intentional, like it does have a very slow swagger about it, but...
That's a whole nother topic, Red Dead, but yeah.
We're gonna mostly ignore Red Dead. Anyway, swinging high into the sky. So that's your cue. Like, we're in the clouds.
Swinging.
You're in the clouds. volumetric
you didn't get the hint!
Yeah,
oh
no,
my god!
I was thinking, like, that is the perfect send-up, like, segue. Come on, Huzo.
Yeah, I'm not with it. It's been a while.
It has, to be fair.
It has been a while. Ace Combat 7, the new one. I've just finished that one, the single player anyway. I haven't had a chance to do much multiplayer because the servers weren't obviously live while I was reviewing it. It sure is an Ace Combat game. Hey, if you've played Ace Combat before, you pretty much know what you're getting here. It is... really good arcade-style dogfighting, some really inventive missions, and a story that has more cheese on it than a triple cheeseburger at McDonald's.
You wrote 30-person fondue party.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep mixing it up, you know. But it is a lot of fun. I particularly enjoy some of these missions they've come up with. So the story is basically random, made-up country... tried to fight off other random made-up country and started war with drones. So drones are the big kind of bad guy.
Is it fake real? I forgot the name of the country.
It's Eurasia and Oceania.
They have a shared universe.
Or whatever. Like, one of them's like this really weird result of a bad translation that they're now literally just stuck with because of canon.
Well, basically, what I can gather in this one, I didn't play the last one, so I'm a bit out of touch on my lore, but there's two main continents. It's Eurasia and Oceania, something like that. Anyway, so Oceania are technically the good guys. The Eurasians, kind of, there's this big space elevator that everyone's building, and it's apparently the key to resources. It sounds like a very... Command and Conquer kind of story, which should be true. And they launch a drone strike. They sneak drones into the country in shipping containers and then kind of hit all the major military points, and you're kind of on your tail from there. And you're playing as a pilot who accidentally shot down the Prime Minister. Whoops. So you've been sent to, like, shit kickers jail, and you get used as a pilot as basically a dummy, you know, just to draw fire from other actual pilots and things like that, and until you gradually prove your worth. And,
I mean,
you know, later
one, they
on,
would never put, like, a human shield into a jet plane, like, to be a human
shield. Like, well, these are all... And that's in the story, though. Like, there's this mechanic that's kind of telling the story, and she's been brought in because she fixes up old banger planes and gets them running again. And so it's like, you know, your first mission, you're in a Datsun 120Y. you're flying... But, like I said, the story, not its strong point.
I love the idea that this bullshit story goes out of the way to explain its own bullshit. It actually sounds...
Yeah,
it
does. It's so cheesy, and like, it's got all those really bad JRPG voiceovers. Like, there's the dodgy Martin Sheen impersonator, then there's the, you know, the super cute princess that's boring as a brick, and then, you know, all those voices there, the tough as nail chick and all that sort of stuff.
All right. Oh, anyway, the shared universe for Ace Combat is called Strange Real.
Strange Real.
That's it. Mm.
So the real highlight is in this is the mission structure. So initially you start with kind of these traditional things you'd sort of see in a fighter game of, you know, shoot the bad guys down, stop them from getting to a certain point, or do a bombing run. But as the missions progress, they get really quite inventive. There's even some stealth missions which work really well. There's like gaps in the radar coverage of this certain area, and you've got to fly in between the gaps and stay out of visibility. There's one mission which was like my favorite mission in the whole game. You were flying through this kind of sheer gully with cliffs on either side, and there were spotlights, and you had to stay out of spotlights, stay in the gully without crashing. It was like really white knuckle sort of stuff, and you were doing this to come into an enemy airbase undetected, and it was just done really well, and it really highlighted the strengths of the game in that the flying model is excellent, you know, it got in it seems like a very arcadey sort of level, but they did it so well that it really stood out to me, you're never doing these kind of offbeat things too long, you know. So the stealth mission doesn't last too long. It doesn't overstay its welcome. This gully mission doesn't overstay its welcome before you're back shooting other planes down or doing bombing runs again, which is also a strength of the game. So, like, this is a really well put together game that fans of the series are going to dig, and I actually think it's going to bring a few people into the fold, because there really isn't any options out there these days, especially on consoles, for someone that wants to get in a fighter plane. It has got a VR mode, and it is fantastic until I vomit.
Did you actually really vomit, though?
No, I didn't. I pulled out before that happened.
Okay.
But 20 minutes is more than sufficient to get the guts doing loop-de-loops. It is so cool, though, and like, I was playing it with the kids, and the kids do much better at it than I do, let me tell you, because their stomachs aren't going crazy. But and just watching this kind of real joy of flying in VR, and it feels like this is what VR's potential is to simulate these sort of things, once they can work out the whole vomit issue. Mm. But yeah, it is. If you've got a stronger stomach than I, it's great. And I really enjoyed it, and as long as I played it in... And luckily, the missions are only about 10 minutes each. So you can get through a mission...
Oh, that's quite good.
Give yourself a breather. Yeah. And there's five or six separate VR missions, and it tells a different story that's about 5 years before the main campaign story. So it's a significant addition to the game, and it's really, really well done. So if you've got the choice between Xbox or PS... PlayStation on this one, I'd go with the PlayStation, even if you don't have VR, just in case
you get the VR later. From what I've checked up on, I think the PS4 is one of those rare, and always, it's always a Japanese developer when this happens, instances where the PS4 Pro version actually slightly outperforms the Xbox One X version.
Xbox One X, yeah.
Which is silly, because I don't think there's a single way in which the One X isn't at least a little bit more powerful than the Pro.
But it's a great game. Yeah, I'm really happy with it.
Good start to the year. This is going to be an interesting January.
It is, and it seems to be these games that aren't quite, you know, traditionally big games, but they've kind of niche games that have got a pretty good following are getting released in this time period, and Ace Combat was the first out of the bat, and I hope more people pick it up, because it deserves.
I am interested to see how this sells.
Yeah.
And also most interesting way of getting rid of a prime minister recently.
Yeah.
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 Maybe we can.
As long as
the
shutdown is gone, like, I think I'd.
Why have an election?
Plays into the story.
Seriously.
I don't want to ruin the cheesy story. It comes back later.
Oh.
Just, you know.
I think I'd actually rather get rid of
it. Gets reelected?
But yes, Ace Combat 7
reelected.
It's good.
Right, PolitikoCast. Well, from prime ministers to kings, I'm stepping back. I've actually managed to play a handful of different things, and of all the things I've been playing over the winter, Christmassy holiday. Oh yeah. Hey, since we're not where we used to be, and this is a new show for some people, I live in Osaka. It's winter. It's cold here.
Aww.
Actually, been playing from about 2 or 3 years ago now, the re-release of King's Quest. The new one, which everybody got the first episode of
for free, yeah.
Free on PlayStation Plus. So they, like, bought the whole thing as a curiosity. And it was a curiosity because, like, everybody reviewed that first episode. Said, yeah, this is actually pretty good. And then, like, there's just nothing unless you really dig deep. Like, nobody really followed up. But, like, this is kind of largely my jam. It turned out my girlfriend was super into this as well because it's, like, a little bit Telltale-y. Bless the people who worked at Telltale. I have to choose those words carefully now.
Mm-hmm.
But to my understanding, I grew up as a Space Quest kid. So I was on, like, the Sierra side of things just because limited money, and that's what I knew. So these were the adventure games where you could die, and that was a pain in the ass, and the LucasArts ones probably were, in general, a little better designed. But I grew up Space Quest, so I was kind of familiar with that DNA, and I was very aware of King's Quest because they'd always put friggin' ads for their own games in the boxes.
Yep.
But never really played them because I only have $50 at a time. And to my understanding, this kind of, like, just goes through the overarching story over the course of 5 different episodes. And it's pretty much traditional adventure as presented in, like, a 3D direct character control world. And for the most part, it's pretty good. They're right. Episode 1 is actually very good. The whole thing focuses around, like, a tournament, and you are playing as King Graham. Well, eventually King Graham. Eventual King Graham. Like, in the tournament, like, eventually makes him king, and there's, like, a whole bunch of different characters and, like, weird puzzles that kind of float in and out there, and it works pretty well. And that kind of goes into episode 2, where, like, you actually have, like, a life or death decision that isn't, like, really direct, but is kind of tied to the order in which you solve certain puzzles in. And there's, like, different days that go by. So it's, like, adding that, like, decision element, but, like, very importantly for me, keeping kind of traditional adventure gameplay, which is, like, find items, use them in interesting ways. Like, logical ways, but aren't necessarily the logical one. Aren't the most obvious. I think Tim Schafer once described, like, the adventure game designers mean, because I'll put a locked door in front of you and say, there's never going to be a key. You have to find the most inane way to still logically open a locked door that you possibly can. Yeah. Which I love. And for the most part, it, like, keeps it out. The characters are pretty well written. Except episode 4 is utter bullshit. Please, and anybody who ever wants to make an adventure game, do not do this. Do not have a, like, entire episode that takes place in, like, an elaborate, effectively what starts out as an escape room. And is literally, narratively, you go into one room, please move these blocks around in the correct order. Next room, please solve with your character moving around the screen to make it even more tedious. This mosaic tile kind of puzzle. Next room, please line up all these lines so that they don't crisscross each other. Next room, please get the right number sequence. This is... I do not want fucking newspaper puzzles in my adventure games.
If you wanted Sudoku, you'd played Mass Effect.
Because, like, it shows up in the genre from time to time, and I almost always hate it. Like, this is exactly the sort of puzzle I do not want in... Like, I want puzzles that are tied to the world and, like, scenarios and interesting situations, when it is literally like, here is a fucking puzzle that you could have bought in an activity book for, like, a long car drive when you were 5. Just... no. Although... the problem with episode 4 in particular is, like, it's literally a gauntlet of this, so a lot of them is, like, kind of... like, say, I don't know, Mario Rabbids Kingdom, whatever it was called. Pretty damn good Switch game. And they had probably some puzzles like that, but, like, literally as, like, small things in between other things. This is just a gauntlet of that shit through all of episode 4. Oh, yeah. It was just terrible. Episode 5 is good again. Actually, episode 5 is really clever. And it's hard to speak on this without spoiling stuff because narratively, obviously, each episode follows things. But the thing that's laid out pretty straight out is, like, he gets older in each episode and, like, his memory starts fucking with him in episode 5. Like, one of the early puzzles is, like, he remembers things differently each time, like, he might go into a screen. And so you're collecting different items for your inventory based on how he remembers them. And, like, you have to actually merge all these memories together. And that's actually, like, a really cool little puzzle dynamic. So my overall take there is it's recommended. I actually would totally suggest anybody who likes narrative or, like, just non-action but, like, involved gameplay to totally worth checking out. But, man, like, episode 4 is so bad. So I guess you can probably skip it. It'll obviously mess with the ability for it to remember your actions if that's super important to you. But Tim's personal recommendation with King's Quest, buy it. It's actually pretty good. You can get it on sale, of course. That's better. Play episodes 1, 2, 3, and 5. I cannot... Oh, my gosh.
Episode sounds a bit so like bad. A Star Wars recommendation.
It's
watch
one of
this,
those
this,
like when
this and this.
Yeah, it's one of those things like because my girlfriend's quite compulsive with these things, and when she starts, she has to finish
everything.
Whatever it is.
Yeah, my husband.
If she starts
like
a TV
that.
Show and she doesn't like it very much, like that's it. We're like locked in for all 6 seasons. So like I'm just sitting next to her, like bored out of my brain during episode 4. I just started looking. You know what? Am I crazy? Is it just me? I started looking up reviews for it on my phone. I was like, no, everybody thinks episode 4 sucks. It really is not just me. Which is a shame because aside from that, like I think those guys did a really good job, and I don't think was it made by the Odd Gentleman. I don't think they've really done anything since then,
no.
Which sucks because they have chops.
And it was
to,
a
like,
really funny from a PR perspective too, because I remember we did the first episode review.
Yeah,
that was literally the only one we could get from anywhere, from any PR source available. We could only get episode 1. And then they kind of went silent. And it was
which
really
weird. Which is a bit
weird,
because the other episodes, except for 4, are still actually...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, pretty good. I mean, there are small errors, like, not errors, but, like, small things. Like, I find the layout of the world, like, a little bit confusing. Like, it's like, I don't remember where X, Y, and Z is half the time. But in general, like, it's actually really solidly made. And weirdly unique in that it's, like, a 3D direct character movement. But still pretty traditional as an adventure game, and I would like there to be more of that. So yeah, check that out. We're going to get even more nostalgic in a moment. We're going to take a short music break. When we come back, discoveries and newer discoveries. So, it's January. Almost the end of January. There are actually reasons why I keep on pretending to look at a watch, which is, one, stupid, and two, completely irrelevant to an audio-only podcast. Yes. Your expression, Huso, is also completely irrelevant to an audio-only podcast. But, yeah, there are reasons for why I relate January, which means I wanted to cop out and do a Game of the Year 2018 show, because, I mean, they're fun to do, and they're easy, and, like, people like to listen to them. But I think we're a little late for that boat. So looking for an alternative that wasn't too far away, I struck upon the idea of, hey, I played some games for the first time last year, and also revisited some classics or like old favorites last year that you don't really get a window specifically to talk about in. So, hello. That hello was to my girlfriend filming me on her camera through the door. This is a very wall-breaking podcast. So I mean, like, you know what, let's just do a whole freaking episode talking about stuff that we either rediscovered or discovered for the first time, like the games we enjoyed from 2018 that weren't actually from 2018.
Yep.
I want to start as recently as possible, I think, and move it way back, because I know Ken apparently just stopped playing Destiny 2 for like just long enough to be able to rediscover it.
Well, yeah, because I spent a lot of time with Destiny 2 when it first came out in September 2017, and sunk in quite a good amount of time on the PlayStation version, the PS4 version.
Yep.
And then after that, the PC version came out, and I spent quite a lot of time on that again. But this sort of petered off when there was a lot of discussion about the sustainability of the whole game for people who had reached the end game content, whether there was anything worth doing. I think just the model of Destiny and these type of sort of lifestyle games, it's got to be open and easy enough and accessible enough for people to get into it, but there's also got to be it's got to have you know, enough to keep the hardcore, for lack of a better term, the diehards, you know, engaged, especially near the end game. And there was a lot of discontent. I think Destiny 2 came out with great fanfare. There was a lot of positivity because people felt there was progress, moving up. There's a lot of momentum, moving up the chain, moving up in terms of levels and power, you know, power levels for your character. But once you sort of reached the end game, there was not a lot of momentum and not a lot of things to do. And so I think there was a lot of dire, you know, predictions about Destiny 2 and its future sort of in late 2017, early 2018. A lot of the dedicated audience came away, you know, moved away from the positive reception and started giving the game a lot of negative reactions. And I wouldn't say that I've given a negative reaction, but I definitely fell off, like, sharply, very, very sharply. And there was quite a lot of work done, my understanding, on the systems, on the back end, on the way weapons are allocated to various slots on your characters. And just prior to the Forsaken launch, that system was rolled out, and then for the Forsaken expansion came round, and now, and I still ignored it for most of 2018. It's really only over the last 4 months, since, say, July. Actually, it's still be more than 4 months. So only in the last half year, since July, that I really got back into it in a big way. And in a very big way. So as of right now, in terms of Destiny 2... I've played 192 hours on PC.
Say the number.
91
Ken.
Hours on PS4.
Say the
Sorry?
Number.
Oh.
192 hours.
Oof.
On PC.
Where did he find 192 hours?
Oh wait, it's just on PC. That's not including your console play.
Yeah, no. On PS4, there's another additional 91 hours.
Yeah. Where did he find 91 hours?
Oh my god! Actually, it's 120 hours because I played about 30 hours in the beta. So,
oh my god!
31 hours that in
is,
the.
This is a man with a wife and kids, by the way. Like, he somehow found this time.
Yeah, almost 400 Bless hours you, worth. Sir. Of... Yeah, almost 400 hours over. Well, but like I said, like the majority of that play, especially on the PC, was over the last half a year. And I've gone back in a very, very strong way. I mean, we've talked about Destiny 2 multiple times on this podcast and me with other people. It's just such an easy game to just sort of jump into for a couple hours a night and then just, okay, I'm done for today. Like, I felt like I've made some progress. But I think the developers, you know, Bungie, really... The game itself had a sort of a midlife crisis in early 2018. I think they had a real serious... like dropping players like crazy, and I don't think as of right now the game has restored the audience to quite the same levels in with which it launched in with. There was a peak of number of players when the game initially launched. It was very popular, and as the you know, I don't like to use the word casuals and hardcore, but you know, as the more, as other people moved on to other games, you know, as it naturally does, you know, the natural sort of what's the word for it?
Order of things. I mean, I am not playing 190 hours of Destiny.
Yeah, no, but yeah. So as you know, the usual, you know, the people who aren't as involved or invested move away to other games, as is natural and understandable and completely normal. What was left behind was the dedicated dedicated hobbyist audience, and they weren't happy, and they weren't happy with what the game was offering at the highest end. And I think Bungie took a real long look at what that meant. So the way that daily bounties, daily activities was spread around, the way weekly activities was sort of shaped and displayed to audiences, the way that was shaped and moved about, the amount of high end late game high difficulty activities was moved and shaped again, the entire weapon structure of Destiny 2 was revamped, like pretty much from ground up, because it was well enough for the initial audience, but it did not work for dedicated community, and Bungie just redid the entire weapon system, which actually was super confusing for me, because I spent so much time with the initial Destiny 2 and then coming back to it again 8 months after the initial launch, and it took relearning from the ground up again. But what they have right now is just no game is perfect, but I think has reached a happy sort of balance in its identity in terms of accessibility to new players, as well as offering enough for the hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, I got into it at the beginning, again, at the beginning of 2018, because my brother bought my husband and I an Xbox One for Christmas, and it was purely for the purpose of playing Destiny 2 together. And so we would have, you know, regular Monday nights, I'd be playing with him and his friends, and then, you know, halfway through the year, it started to kind of teeter off a little bit. But what I thought was really interesting is how Activision kind of try to get either a bit of the community back or try to get a bit of new community in. So they had, during BlizzCon, an offer to kind of get a couple of things free. Then there was the whole Bungie-Activision split that's happened as well. That's probably had an impact
that's
on how...
That's happening right now.
Yeah, and how that's... how the community's perceiving that, I'm not 100% sure. Because, it can be perceived either way.
It's super interesting to see what happens. Especially even with Destiny 2, I think it's going to be super... I don't think a lot's going to change with Destiny 2, but there will be changes. I think Destiny 3 is going to be a completely different beast, though.
Do you think you're no longer going to have to pay to like repaint your character in different ways and only get one use of it?
I think Bungie are going to use it as an excuse to really... Like, not so use Activision as a scapegoat for all the problems that Destiny have attracted over the years.
But they definitely get to say clean slate, bling, bling.
Yeah,
bling,
you know, basically, and they won't come out and say it, but, you know, the implication will be there that we only put that shit in because Activision made it.
Well, they don't, all they have to do is, like, take away a couple of things that people really didn't like that maybe aren't even monetizing very well anymore anyway, and it's going to give that distinct impression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They've got a real chance here.
That's not the first split that Bungie has had, has it? I thought that
they split from Microsoft
as well. So it's either a testament to the size of the company that they feel that they're self-sufficient, or it is something about the
level of
publicity.
I think in Microsoft's case, they were just done with Halo, to be honest.
Yeah.
And as long as they were with Microsoft, that's all they were going to be as a Halo developer. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that was the instance there, but I actually think it's a little less harmonious.
Heard numerous different people say that relationship was always kind of awkward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's interesting.
But this is not a drama topic, although I think that would be interesting to talk about in the future, the publisher-developer strains and, like, where those lines get drawn. Sarah, let's actually give you a chance to talk because we've, like, you know, stumped all over your Diablo 3 that you were playing
yeah,
earlier.
Yeah, I know. Before the podcast, you know, we had a discussion about what we've been playing, and unfortunately for everybody in the podcast, I've been playing nothing but Diablo 3 because that's about the extent of pick up and put down time that I have at the moment. But the one game that I got really hooked on in 2018 was a remaster of Hyrule Warriors.
Of all things.
Of all things. Because I'd bought the 3DS version a couple of years beforehand, and I had sort of enjoyed it, and it had come with a little bit of, you know, decent loot to it, and a little bit of changes to the original game that had come out in the Wii U, which nobody bought. But I was never happy with the controls of it. It always felt, with the 3DS, it just... It never felt comfortable to play. So
this is the Link Dynasty Warriors.
Yeah, this
game,
is the Link
it?
Dynasty yes, Warriors. This I is the Link so. Musou game. It's yep. Yeah, and I started when the Definitive Edition came out, which basically had all the DLC, it had all the stuff the 3DS had brought along with it, and I went, stuff it, I really want to give it another go, and I'm really, really happy that I got it on the Switch because it is such a different beast. And so much more fun to play than the previous iterations of it. So it's got, you know, everything embedded in. I've played through the story mode. I'm still playing through the adventure maps. And it's... I haven't even touched on... There's challenge modes where you have to play as a certain character and do and get certain achievements. And I haven't even touched on that yet. There's... a whole lot of extra additional content that I'm still slowly pacing my way through. I've joined a Discord chat just to learn about how to upgrade certain things and what weapon skills are fantastic. And I got hideously addicted to this game during 2018, and it was a whole lot of fun. So, and probably the only thing that I really played during 2018, probably should have played some more, but you know,
good hideous fun.
It was just so gratifying just to sit and just have in order to get A grades on certain levels in the adventure map, you had to complete them within 15 minutes. You'd have to have about 1400 kills, and you had to not lose a certain amount of life or health points or whatever. So it was a good way to kind of have a handheld game that you are picking up, literally doing one little aspect of a map in less than 15 minutes and then putting it back down again. And if you succeeded, it was great. And if you didn't, you didn't. And, you know, you got on with your day and then you may have come back for another 15 minutes. So it was kind of like that nice little gratifying hit a whole bunch of shit for 15 minutes and then put it down and get back to everything else that you needed to be doing. Or go to sleep in my case.
Which is what we all really need to be doing if you break it
well,
down.
Yeah, I had different reasons that I really needed sleep and really did not want to do anything. Yeah.
It probably explains a lot of your gaming for the last year, just literally being button mashy, kill all the things on the screen.
Yeah. Well, my only other game that I really invested in a lot last year was Ni No Kuni 2, but it was released in 2018, and I never enjoyed the first game, but I really, really loved the second one. So, you know, but that was, yeah, I mean, it's, I watched everybody on Twitter playing, you know, all these really great games. There were a whole lot of people getting a lot more into Destiny 2, a whole lot more people were getting into, you know, Monster Hunter World, Spider-Man, Red Dead Redemption, all these kind of things. And I just sat there and went, I couldn't have the ability to play something for maybe longer than about an hour and a half before I was completely wiped. And then now, you know, it's, I've got to have something that I can pick up and play and then put
and
back
Red
down.
Red Dead really is not a game that respects your time at all, so
no.
Yeah, forget that one.
Mm. No, it's something that you can watch on Twitch. It's not something that you can sit and play yourself. So I got hooked on a lot of Let's Plays last year, sitting and watching vicariously what everybody else was doing.
Which is somewhat fair enough.
Yeah.
Anyway, Huso, you and I, we've kind of, like, really rediscovered old favourites.
Yeah, we have.
If you want to keep this chronological, though, in this, like, recent to old, like, think you get to go first.
I think I do, because, you know, there was a lot of talk this year about Playground Games developing a new Fable for Microsoft. And it kind of, and with the magic of the Xbox One's backwards compatibility, which is fantastic, I've got to say, I went and played all three Fable games again. They were, you know, around the middle of the year, I sort of dove in. I thought, oh, I'll give it a go again, because I remember really enjoying it. And even Fable 3, which has some serious problems, I still generally enjoyed my time with it, despite its issues. And the thing with Fable is, like, it's very hard to separate the game from Peter Molyneux. So if you're of a certain age like myself, and probably Tim and Ken, actually Sarah's probably getting close to that time too, but it's very hard to escape the PR hype that came with Fable. You know, Peter Molyneux was very loud about what this game was going to do to gaming, and then it's kind of, he'd done that before with Black and White and things, but this was kind of the first time he'd just gone ballistic and gone and promised the world, and it didn't deliver the world. But what it did deliver was a really good action RPG, especially the first one, which was on the original Xbox. Fable 2 is the best of the series, hands down. It kind of took the ideas of the first game and made a proper good RPG about it, with a really good story and some really funny British Monty Python-esque humour. Fable 3 tried to get really... it had that kind of RPG part for the first half of the game, and the second half of the game introduced this kind of resource management, running a kingdom mechanic to it, that it's a really quite a good idea that was implemented really poorly.
Sounds so a lot like Ni No Kuni 2 fast forward.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Like, so they did it really well, so...
Yeah, this did it really badly, yeah. And it became a drag, and that last... Especially that last third of Fable 3 is quite annoying. But I thoroughly enjoyed going back to this series, and I sincerely hope that that's what Playground is working on, because I think, A, it's something that Microsoft needs as a nice big RPG that they get to call their own. I think that would very much help them. But I love the idea of this Fable universe that's kind of traditional fantasy, but kind of more the life of Brian at the same time. And it's a really wonderful mix. It takes these kind of fantasy tropes, and it's not afraid to take the piss out of them, or the piss out of itself. And that sort of... that British humour really appeals to me, and I think now that Fable is away from Peter Molyneux, and if Playground, the people they're hiring, you know, you've seen a pretty big list of impressive names going over to them, and a lot of ex-Fable developers too. So I have hope that if this is what they're developing, it's going to be quite the game, and it was wonderful revisiting them, I've got to say. And they're all part of Game Pass too, so if you've got Xbox and Game Pass, I really enjoyed going back to them. They hold up pretty well, and they're well worth your time.
It's really encouraging when a game you remember from that long ago still charms you. Even more so in my case, because I'm like towing the line, I guess, between like new release and like rediscovery with this, but it was like so bare bones, I'm gonna let it count anyway. And I was actually pretty nervous, like, going into the Shenmue HD version. Like, this is probably my favorite game ever. I have not played it in a very long time. It's the sort of thing that I can see aging very poorly. And it took forever to download, but I'm going to put that on the PlayStation Network on my internet. For whatever reason, it took 2 days. This is not a big game by 2018 standards, especially considering that I know the first thing you discover is, holy crap, the voice recording quality in that game is terrible. Like, legitimately really bad. I guess having speakers as opposed to, like, the speaker in your cheap-ass TV from 1999 is a pretty big difference. But I was, after playing this game, like, the first day I finally got installed, I was, like, so happy. I was so happy that, man, I still really like this. Like, it's when Shenmue came out, and I hate having to contextualize this because it makes me feel old, but it was one of those small handful of games that was like a visual benchmark. It's like, it is up there. It is like Unreal, Shenmue, Gears of War. Like, it was one of those games where you saw it for the first time and you just went, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, this is unbelievable looking. And obviously, a game that came out in Japan in 1999 is maybe not the technical benchmark that the world is looking for in 2018 and now 2019. But it does look... I don't think it's actually 4K. I think it was, like, 1080p, but it's, like, anti-aliased all hell or something, because it looks incredibly sharp. Hmm. But I think, well, some part... Like, the controls in this game are quite stiff. It is actually analog character control. One thing I've noticed, and I think something, a trend that started this generation, where open world games have become better at, like, getting you into their world instead of just being big open spaces to feed you crappy missions. Excuse my cynicism for, like, a lot of early open world games, which I fucking hate. Especially Grand Theft Auto 3 and Vice City
And also Spider-Man.
I would probably quite enjoy Spider-Man. At least, like, moving around Spider-Man's fun. My point there is, I think, like, Rockstar games, and they've slowly gotten better, have traditionally had really, really shitty mission design, and if you don't enjoy causing chaos in those worlds, there's not much there for you. But, like, over time, I noticed at the time, like, The Witcher 3 is, like, this feels like the first big-budget open-world game where the world matters to me.
That's true of RPGs in general. I think The Witcher 3 is kind of this benchmark for a lot of things, so... Yeah.
But people were enjoying it for that way, and I think people have been playing, I think, Red Dead Redemption 2 that way, and I've heard stories of, I think, some people appreciating even Grand Theft Auto 5 that way. I never actually played Grand Theft Auto 5. A lot of stuff came out that year. And as not a fan of that franchise, despite it being the biggest game in the world, let it pass me by. But the thing is, like, what Shenmue does really well is just let you exist in its world and walk around and take your time, and it is a very slow burn. And I think that part of it put a lot of people off when it came out. And, okay, there's more detail than a lot of more modern games now, but, like, that core there was actually very unique for its time. But I don't think has been something that in games in general has been appreciated en masse until, like, the last 2, 3, maybe 4 years.
Well, especially with Zelda Breath of the Wild would be the one where you'd sit there and think, okay, this is industrial strength open world. It's not really always telling you where to go. You're just going around and figuring out how you want to play it.
Those are two slightly different designs. Zelda's more of an adventure, which Shenmue is like living, I guess.
Yeah, true.
From my very little experience with Shenmue, and I will say it's very little, it kind of feels a little bit like the predecessor to something like the Yakuza.
Oh,
games.
That you're not the first person to make that comparison. The Yakuza games are much snappier.
Obviously, and they are much snappier development, but that's it. Kind of feels like that sort of not technically open world design, open kind of neighborhood design.
But yeah, I mean, the thing I'm scared about with Shenmue 3 is that they try and emulate too much of the open world games that followed from Shenmue, which is not at all what I would want from this.
Yeah.
Like, it still definitely has its own identity, and it definitely has some rough corners. And the HD version, at least when I played it, definitely had some rough corners. I'd have some, like, cut scenes where, like, the players would... Like, the character models would just disappear or, like, just focus on a pond and not look at anything else. It was a pretty buggy... It's a pretty buggy, remaster, but, like, something about, like, that... You're in this one area, you get to know it really well, it's actually very slow paced, and you really feel like it is a very... Like, by the end, it feels like an actual place. Hmm. That still holds up pretty well, despite the polygon counts not looking anywhere near as high as you remembered.
But do you reckon, and I'm trying to, like, I'm listening to everybody talk and trying to sort of find a common theme across, you know, the games that we've been talking about, you know, Fable for Huzo, Sarah with Hyrule Warriors, like... And you with Shenmue, like a lot of the games we're talking about here, either does not require a huge investment from us, like in terms of time and effort and emotional investment, or it is stuff that we're familiar with enough that we don't have to relearn the vocabulary of those games.
Well, we are talking rediscovery.
No, absolutely. So that's kind of... But it's not. It's more than just rediscovery, but there is a level of... I can imagine
comfort.
Somebody...
Comfort to it, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine somebody...
Yeah, it's comfort food.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I can imagine somebody trying to get into Shenmue for the first time, like now, like a young'un. And...
You would have to...
Struggle.
Yeah,
there like, would be a
there
struggle.
There would be... The lower fi aspect of it would definitely be a struggle.
But you know, probably everything about that would be a struggle. Like, the mission design, you know, everything is probably from, you know, everything's from a different era. It's just, I'm not saying it's bad or whatever, it's just from a different era. But you going back into it as part of your rediscovery, you don't have to relearn, or it's not an
aim. I don't have to relearn anything, but one thing I have noticed is like that slower paced part of it now, I think, at least within our generation, is perhaps something that would be more accepted by them now than was when it came out.
Possibly.
They're free to say that the story's not very good, mind you. I have never understood the people who thought that Shenmue was a masterpiece of storytelling.
Well, they just want to know what happens to whoever at the end of number two.
Exactly. Great, great storytelling right there. Want to know what happens to the guy.
With the thing.
The dude with the hair.
Doing the thing at the place. And
the cool Chinese costume.
Yeah.
move this forward a little bit, I guess, because we have like played some newer things as well, and we're running a bit long, so let's like jolt this thing forward a little bit. Sarah apparently didn't discover anything last year outside of that kids take a lot of effort to take care of.
Well, yeah, I mean, I tried it, but it was the intent on playing a lot of things and then not actually getting around to them. So the things that I really wanted to discover, I really wanted to get into things like Enter the Gungeon. I wanted to give that a solid go. I got fascinated with emulators and some of the Zelda randomizers that I had been watching, and I really, really wanted to give those a go. It just didn't happen last year, but it was kind of discovering a few new things, but then just not putting them into action. So for me, that's 2019, is to really, I really want to give these randomizer things a good solid go, because it just takes... It takes something that, for me, you know, Link to the Past is the ultimate comfort food for me, and just put a little bit of a twist in it, just to kind of sit and just see what absolute insane BS could actually happen if I, you know, start the game and I don't get a sword or a shield, and I get the mushroom, for fuck's sake, and it just doesn't do anything. So. Yeah, I wish I'd discovered more. I really did, but that's 2018 for you.
Life happens. It's I mean, that's why I had plans to like finally play freaking Super Metroid during October. That was gonna be my Halloween themed horror game, and stuff got in the way, and I couldn't do it. So stuff that actually did happen. Ken, you played a game I actually quite liked a lot.
Deus Ex Mankind Divided.
I really liked that game too.
I enjoyed it, but I think I held off on playing it. Mostly because prior to that game's release, there was so much talk about its politics or lack thereof. And the framing and the framing devices that particular game used, with regards to, you know, people being prejudiced, and against, being prejudiced against, you know, people who are in positions of, I don't know. There was a lot of discussion.
It was very much an apartheid.
Yeah, they definitely used they used apartheid language and visuals. Yep. But, you know, there was a lot of discussion about whether the people who were being, you know, prejudiced against, were they, on one hand, they were, I guess they were people with disabilities, but also at the other hand, they were people who can
people with way more abilities, it sort of gives them an unfair leg up in society.
Yeah.
Yeah, augmentation's a weird thing to try and use this for.
And also, like, for the better part, like, they had this weird system where the people who can afford the good augmentations are people who are extremely rich, so that's not like they are,
never mind that your player character absolutely should have like sanctions placed on him, like holy fuck, you're a walking time bomb murder machine.
Yeah, so there was a lot of that discussion about its politics and its identity then, and not that I was turned off, but I don't think I was at a place where I wanted to process all of that. But then you play the game and it turns out that there really isn't any much of that at all.
It's a lot simpler than you thought.
I was actually thinking that there was a lot of heavy stuff that was going to be in there, and that's why I kind of...
It's basically like air persecution bad.
Yeah.
It's about as deep as it gets.
And I really, really, really gave it sort of... I guess gave it more credit than it deserved, I guess, thinking that this was going to be some heavy, heavy stuff. And so I held off on the game for the longest time. I mean, this game was released, what, 2016?
Yeah, I think
17.
Was it
2016?
Yeah, I held off on it for a long time. And it's been sitting in my Steam library. It's one of those ones, you know. August 26th. It was released August 26th, and I played it last year. And, yeah... It's one of those things, and I guess it's part of the rediscovery process, which is the topic that we're talking about. There are games which I consciously sort of set aside thinking, I'll get round to this when I feel like I'm in a place good enough, like I'm in a mental and emotional place strong enough to take it. And Mankind Divided definitely sat in that sort of list of games with me thinking that it was going to be very heavy, but then it turns out that it's not as controversial as what the
it's got a funky cool sci-fi story to it.
Oh no, yeah,
it's really not political.
No,
it's an enjoyable story. Like it's completely fine.
It's a completely
it's
fine.
Not bad.
No, I enjoyed it, and it was a completely fine story, and I enjoyed the world, and the game mechanics was great. You know, there's quite a lot of sneaking around for, and I think it probably had more in. Going for in terms of its systems than the first one, the first Deus Ex Human Revolution.
Yeah,
that is the first Deus Ex. And
yes, Ken, we're not going there. We're not taking the bait.
Aww.
We're not taking the bait. I'm not taking the bait. I'm not getting.
You're trying so hard.
I am. I'm just sort of fishing.
Your own laugh track.
the first one, yeah. This being the second one, the second one, the good second one. And it's good. I mean, it's good. Like, I don't know.
That's a really enjoyable, stealthish kind of game.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. And this is not the first game. This is not the only game, I'm sure, that on my list that if I were to sort of boot it up now, it's like, why did I put it off for so long? There's no reason to. I mean, one reason being my Steam pile of shame is extremely big, but there was no reason for me to have ever felt any type of trepidation with regard to this game. It's good.
Your reasons for putting it off are like more noble than mine. Mine were like just I noticed a lot of people complaining that it didn't feel like it finished properly. Spoiler, it does actually have more closure than people may have led you to believe.
It's still
It's not completely round.
It still very much feels like a middle part of a story.
But it does feel like it builds up to something at the very knowing that going in kind of made it a lot more acceptable.
Yeah.
So my reason for holding off for so long was like, I guess this is gonna be DLC, I'm just gonna wait for the Game of the Year edition. Which never happened, so...
It did have DLC, but it... Yeah,
didn't
have a game.
Didn't really tie that stuff up.
Yeah.
No, it was just extra missions. Which I played. Like, Deus Ex is my bag. It's totally... Always has been.
Yeah.
One of my favorite series, so...
And the other thing I just don't get about games like Deus Ex or games like... Not even... Dishonored... is that I don't know how people can pull off the crazy shit that they do with the abilities, because I don't have that type of imagination. when it comes to games like that. When they give you like lots of different toys and tools and abilities, and then gives you sort of an area to play around in them, I'm usually not the most imaginative, so I just go for the...
I feel like those abilities and like the highlight clips you see in like the E3 stage demos are like the equivalent of the Instagram live photos.
Oh no, not even, but like stuff that you see on Let's Plays, like some of the crazy stuff. Yeah.
Dishonored was really good for that. Deus Ex, I guess it was more grounded.
It was a little bit, but there is some crazy stuff.
I mean, Dishonored, I unashamedly spent a lot of time just crouched around a corner waiting to like stun gun a guy from behind
or hit him in the head or something.
But the
good thing about Deus Ex always has been the freedom of choice. Like, it is a perfectly legitimate playstyle to sneak, or it is perfectly legitimate to go in guns blazing. Either way, it can work. It all depends on you, and I've always loved it. Sneaking is more fun, but if you want to go balls out, and like, I kind of tend to play the games like I'll sneak until I get caught, and then out come the big guns.
Which is a logical way to go about
about
it, because I mean, my favorite flaw of stealth games, I think fundamentally, is the fact that everyone searches for you for about 2 minutes and then just go, "Eh, we found a dead body, but maybe I just saw a cat." Yeah. And it's not like they never locked down the building.
Yeah.
Like, the armored vans never show up outside. Like, we found 30 dead people. We'll deal with it tomorrow.
Yeah. Let someone else worry about it.
But, I mean, if you do want to go guns blazing, Matt, how's Alienation with them blazing? Blazing.
Jeez, you're good on the segues tonight, aren't you?
He's really quick.
I've got that one.
I'm impressed.
It is like Destiny as a twin stick shooter. Is essentially what Alien Nation is. It was one of those PS Plus games that you, like you said before, you grab the, you click yes, I want that game, and then you sit there forever and you never play it. But I finally got around to playing.
Side PSA, play Iconoclast. That game is fucking fantastic.
And so Alien Nation, it just plays like Destiny as a 2D, like top down twin stick shooter. You've got three different classes. They all have different specials and abilities and moves, and there's a shitload of aliens, and you have to kill them, and then when you're done killing all the aliens in the levels, you go back and start again and try and get better loot. So it's actually really well put together. It's a Housemarque game, so they've kind of nailed that arcade sort of old school sort of feel. It's really their bread and butter. But this surprised me. I thought I'd play it for a bit, and I quite enjoy the occasional twin stick shooter. But it's generally for a few hours and then I'll never play it again. Like Soul Eater, a Cactus, a great game, but once you've done it, there's no real reason to play it again. Whereas Alien Nation kind of added this Destiny kind of overlay to it. And actually, it's not as deep as Destiny, but there is still quite a bit there to do. And I was really quite impressed with it and had a lot of fun with it. And it's like that 15-minute game. You can get on, do a couple missions. It matchmakes really well. So if anyone's playing, it'll just drop them into your game, or you can drop into their game, and it's the community seems really cool. They're all helping. There's no jerks, because it's not in their benefit to be a jerk. It really surprised me. It's really well, and I really would like to see more of it. I actually went out and bought the special edition that, because, you know, I felt like I'd got such a kick out of it that I felt I'll...
Oh, that's sweet.
It was on sale.
And you pay extra $5 or something. I just kind of buy the thing on top just to be like, no, guys, good work. This is like a tip jar.
It was totally worth, you know, I should have bought it when it came out, to be honest. That's what I felt. So I was happy to go and get the few extra, you know, it was a $5 pack of maybe a couple of levels or something like that. And it was, my way of saying thanks, because this was cool.
Well done,
I got
guys.
A lot of fun out of it. So, yeah, pick up Alien Nation if you haven't. It's well worth your time.
Maybe I will. I could use some mindless shooting.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll...
It's got that active reload thing from Gears of War in it too, which is a really satisfying mechanic, I find. So, if you're mindlessly shooting and then just reloading is kind of a bit monotonous, but getting that active reload where you get the perfect reload and get the damage bonuses... It's still a satisfying...
Oh, there's something really... Like a rhythmic kind... When you have some... Just... I don't know... I guess there's something about human nature, like having a beat to everything.
Yeah.
But like, whenever a game rewards you for doing something with like that rhythmic timing, it always feels good.
It just feels great to get it right. And if you get a run on and you can get that kind of every...
You kind of get a groove and then like...
And,
you're like...
Yeah. it's really satisfying.
Yeah. That's a small mechanical thing that I think I really enjoy when it like shows up in like small things. Anyway, it turns out we've been running really long. good job, us.
Yes.
Yep. Well,
it's been a while. We had a lot to talk about.
We're out of practice. We have stuff to talk about. Sarah, thank you very much for getting your baby to sleep for us.
You're welcome. The treasure goblin is still asleep. I'm so proud.
You should be. Do you have anything you wish to pimp before we close this thing out?
Look, just the usual. I'm on Twitter at Esoteric. Most of my writing is still over on Player 2, so you can search for me by author, or you can search a whole bunch of the other really awesome writers on there who I am not worthy. I'm not worthy. But yeah, if anyone wants to drop me a line on Twitter and say, hey, how you going with the baby? And I go, hey, I think I'm doing okay. She's still alive. Then totally cool.
Right. Ken, has anybody managed to sue you for your Twitter handle yet?
No, not yet. Although I do share my Twitter handle with the very, very similar The Pixel Hunt, who's made Bury Me My Love.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
This is a cool little story, actually.
Yeah, we sort of exchanged. People started tagging me for things like ages ago. I'm like, I think you've got the wrong person here. And then after a bit of after a bit of searching, it turns out they actually referenced these developers and not me. And I started tagging, like redirecting those tweets at me to the actual proper account. Like, no, you want the. So if you're looking for me, you're looking for Pixel Hunt at Pixel Hunt. If you're looking for the devs who made Bury Me My Love, you're looking at the Pixel Hunt. But I should have a new Player 2 Plays, my first in a very long time. It's
now that you know how your sound equipment works.
Yeah, it's uploaded to YouTube, and at some point it'll go live. Depending,
it'll be live before this podcast is.
Yeah, so
most likely.
Yeah, excellent.
I have to remember how to edit this stuff. Oh, Huso, are you going to edit it for me?
No, you got this one. If I host, I'll edit though. I've got to stay in practice, you know.
All right, fine. Where can we find you?
Huso81 at Twitter, and of course at Player 2. It's wonderful to have the Pixelcast at Player 2, I must say. So,
it feels so over. Good to be welcome as a squatter.
yes, absolutely. We take all kinds.
Anyway, yeah, I am at PretendBeard on, I guess, most things at this point, except probably never PlayStation Network, as while they will let us change your names in the near future, I don't like the idea of maybe risking half my library disappearing. Yeah, that is one hell of a little caveat that's got going on there. that's a pretty important fine print.
Like, honestly, of all the things,
like some game that you have bought may just vanish. It's kind of up there.